This recording is a brief overview of the book, The Communication Clinic. You will hear Barbara Pachter, the author, discuss the key takeaways.
Welcome. Your interactions with others, whether in person, in writing, or online, have a tremendous impact on your business. Consider these statements from participants in my seminars. We were rushed, and our proposal had numerous typos in it, and as a result, we didn't get the contract. I lost a sale because I wasn't prepared for a presentation. I didn't address the customer's needs. These individuals were not inexperienced, but they just didn't pay attention to their communication, and it was costly. Do you take note of yours? You don't want your communication shortcomings to derail your interactions with your customers, potential customers, employees, or vendors before you've had a chance to find out what you might have accomplished. This audio presentation will go through the key areas of business communication that will affect you and your relationships with your customers. They include writing a powerful email, making a successful presentation, developing a professional presence, and expressing yourself assertively. Think about your own business and your interactions with your customers as we go through these communication skills. Ask yourself, are you practicing them and practicing them correctly? And if not, would you be more likely to stand out from your competition if you did? So let's get started. The first area covers business writing. We live and work in an age where technology is constantly changing the way we communicate. One thing, however, hasn't changed, and that is the importance of our words and the need to write them effectively, regardless of whether you are writing an email, sending a text, or posting on social media. When you connect in writing to your customers or potential customers, you reveal a great deal about yourself and your company. And even though the business world is more informal today than in the past, it doesn't mean that you can be sloppy or rude. If your writings are unclear, vague, and have typos in them, why would your customers believe that you would do a good job for them? I wouldn't. We will start reviewing some general writing guidelines so your emails speak well of you and your business. The first item is to make your writings visually appealing and easy to read. This is often overlooked by business people, and it's really important. You want to make it easy for your customer to understand your message. You don't want your readers to have to work to, quote, get your points. To accomplish this, there are a number of things to do. The first is to avoid having paragraphs that are very long. If you do, they become what I call sheets of black ice, causing the reader's eye to slide right over the paragraph, not reading the words. My general guideline is that you want your paragraphs to be no longer than 9 lines. But that doesn't mean every paragraph should be 9 lines. The key to increasing readability is to vary the length of your paragraphs. So you can have paragraphs longer than 9 lines and as short as 1 line. This difference in the number of lines in your paragraphs adds vitality to your writings. You also want to make sure you include a blank line between paragraphs. Your paragraphs can merge together into that one large block of type if you don't add white space between them. Using bullets also helps readability. A bulleted list improves the visual appearance of your document and makes it easier for the reader to quickly grasp your concepts. Your key items stand out. As one seminar participant said, "I got my emails down to one screen when I started using lists. I thought my customers would want me to write more to explain my ideas. No one ever asked for more." In addition to bullets, use headings when you can to divide your documents into sections. This makes it easy for readers to quickly see what areas you will be discussing. Headings don't have to be complicated. For most business emails, your headings can either be in bold or in all caps. Now let's talk about fonts. Well, really it's font size, font type, and color. And with computers, you have all sorts of options today. You can use very large or very small type sizes, fancy fonts, or different colors. But when you do, it becomes difficult for people to read your message quickly. Generally, it's best to use 10 or 12 point type and an easy to read font such as Arial, Calibre, Times New Roman, or Georgia. Handwriting fonts such as Lucinda Handwriting are very difficult to read when used in the body of an email. Black or dark blue are the best colors for email type. The next item I'm sure many of you know, but still occasionally in my seminars, there are some people that don't realize that writing in all capital letters is the equivalent of shouting. What's more, an email in all capital letters is difficult to read. Don't use all lowercase letters either. That too is hard to read. You also want to avoid very long sentences. Studies of business writing suggest that sentences should average about 15 to 17 words in length, but that doesn't mean every sentence should be 16 words. The key to increasing the readability of your documents, just like what we discussed with your paragraphs, is to vary their length. This means using some short, some medium, and some long sentences. Let me read to you a 46-word sentence that one of my students wrote and see if you understand its meaning. To assist us in the development of the annual budget and to permit the inclusion therein of one-time major expenditure items required for the operation of your department, you are requested to submit your anticipated requirements in order of descending priority for the calendar year. Was it clear? The writer of this sentence knew what he or she wanted to say, but did you? When I show this sentence to the participants in my seminars, they suggest many different meanings. That's not okay. You don't want to confuse your customers. Eliminating extra words in your documents is another item to pay attention to. One of the biggest complaints people have about other people's writings is that they use too many words. Unfortunately, the people doing the complaining are also using too many words. And know that the shorter the document, the more likely it will be read. A 17th century French philosopher said, "I have made this letter longer because I lack the time to make it shorter." A current update of this quote comes from Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, who said, "I'm sure that it's harder to write shorter and crisper than it is to write long and dull." It is easy to write long and dull. You don't want to do that. One of the key ways to eliminate your extra words is to stop using redundant expressions. This is when you use two or three words together, and one of those words means exactly what you are trying to convey with the additional words. For example, how many of you have ever written "assembled together"? That's redundant. You don't need to use the word "together." That is what "assemble" means, to put things together. Another common redundant expression is "postponed until later." You don't need "until later." That is what "postpone" means. You are not doing something until a later time. Let me give you an exercise. I will read a sentence, and I want you to listen for the redundant expression. Ready? It was an unexpected surprise when the CEO came to the meeting. Did you catch the redundant expression? If you thought "unexpected surprise," you are correct. A surprise is unexpected. You don't need to write "unexpected." The sentence would then become, without the redundant expression, "It was a surprise when the CEO came to the meeting." The next area of business writing that we'll discuss covers proofreading. This means that you look for and correct any errors in your documents before you hit the send button. I know that any one of us can make a mistake now and then, myself included. But if your emails consistently have errors, or any one document has a number of errors, your professionalism will be questioned. One woman shared with me that she proofed her emails after she sent them. Don't do this! It's a painful exercise. Let's discuss three simple ways to catch your errors before, not after, you send your emails. You want to read your message out loud, syllable by syllable. And I mean that slowly. If you read the words slowly, you are more likely to notice any missing words, wrong words, misspellings, and wrong tenses of verbs. If you speak quickly, you might get caught up in the meaning of your words and miss the mistakes. As one engineer in my class said, unless I read slowly, I am reading what is in my head, not what's on the screen. The next is to learn your common errors. These are the mistakes that you regularly make, and we all have common errors. When you know yours, look for them, and you will most likely find them. One of my common errors is that I mistype woman and women. I know the difference between those words, but I mistype them. When I proof, I will double-check that I am using the words correctly. Start paying attention to your errors and generate a list of the ones that occur regularly, so you can look for them when you proof your writings. And finally, you want to double-check any numbers. This is just good common sense. A misplaced decimal point can be very costly to you and your business. These suggestions that we just reviewed will only add seconds to the time you spend on an email, but they will help you catch your errors. Isn't your reputation worth those few moments? We'll now look at some specific suggestions for email. As you know, email follows a specific format, providing lots of sections to pay attention to. The first is your email address, and you want to use your name in yours if you can. People will know immediately who has sent the email. One man told me, I haven't opened emails that later turned out to be from people I do business with because I thought their emails were spam based on their addresses. Use either your full name or your first initial and last name. That is what I do. My name is Barbara Pachter, and my email address is bpachter@pachter.com. This brings up the next point. If you can, use your business name as your domain. I'm a small business owner, and my domain is pachter.com. Having your own domain lends substance to your business. One more item about the email address. I encourage you to remember my acronym AIL, A-I-L. This stands for address in last. This means you put the address in an email after you have finished writing and proofing the message. You can't send an email without an address. Even when you are replying to a message, it's a good precaution to delete the recipient's address, post it in the body of an email, and then reinsert it only when you are sure the message is ready to be sent. Let's talk subject lines. I encourage you to use a descriptive one that is targeted to your reader. Some good ones include giving a brief overview of the email content, such as completed contracts or an update on the budget. Another suggestion for a good subject line is using the word question, such as question about the upcoming conference. Start noticing subject lines that catch your attention. Can you adapt them to your own emails? We are now on to salutations. And even though email doesn't technically require a salutation, as it's considered to be in memo format, they are strongly recommended. People use salutations to appear friendlier and to soften the tone of their writings. There is a hierarchy of greetings from informal to formal, and you should match the salutation to the relationship you have with your customer or potential customer. The general hierarchy follows this format from informal to formal. Hi. Hi, Anna. Hello. Hello, Jake. Dear Justin. Dear Ms. Jones. If you know your customer, you probably will start with hi or hello. If you don't know your customer, you probably want to be more formal and start with Dear Jennifer or Dear Mr. Jones. And make sure you spell the person's name correctly. I know that it may not bother you if your name is misspelled, but I want to impress upon you that many people are insulted if their name is misspelled. And if you offend someone in that first line, they may not read any further. To double check that you have done so, look at the spelling of the person's name in their signature block or email address. Also, don't shorten a person's name or use a nickname unless you know it is okay. My name is Barbara. Please don't start your emails to me using Hi Barb. And the only people who may refer to me as Babs are my son and his friends. If more than one person will receive an email, you can use Hello Sarah and Bill or Hello Everyone. After two or three emails have gone back and forth on the same email string, the salutation can be dropped. We'll talk about texting in a few moments, but I mention it now because you don't want to use text shortcuts in an email. All too often, people forget that they are writing an email, not a text, and use shortcuts such as writing the letter U for the word U, Y-O-U. Email is informal communication, but not that informal. If you start with a salutation, you end with a closing, such as regards, best, all the best, or thanks. A more formal closing is sincerely. You could also end an email with what I call a closing statement, such as see you in the morning or thanks for your help. After the closing, include a signature block, providing your reader with some information about you. Generally, this would state your full name, title, the company name, and your contact information, including a phone number. It drives people crazy when they have to look up a phone number or don't have a number to call when they want to speak to you. Don't overuse reply all. People don't want to receive emails that they don't need to see. It wastes their time. Use reply all only when it is necessary for everyone on the list to see the email. A question I'm often asked about salutations is what to do if you don't know the person's name. I suggest that you use a non-gender specific, non-sexist term, something like dear client, customer, or team member. You can also use representative and add it to any company name or department name, such as dear Microsoft representative or dear human resources representative. Let's just spend a little time on writing and social media. LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and others have significantly influenced the ways we can communicate. Though some sites allow more text than others, writing effectively still matters when you post something. If you use strong negative language, put people down, name call, or curse, what are you saying about yourself? And why would I want to do business with you? What you post can and will come back to haunt you. One of my students summed it up best when she said, "A colleague of mine was in a bad car accident and is seeking reimbursement for her medical expenses. I know that she was in a lot of pain and saw many doctors. However, if you were to read her Facebook page, it would appear that she'd been having a grand time since the accident." When sharing on social media, remember these two writing suggestions. 1. Always assume the quality of your writing matters. Proofread your comments before you post anything. I know that social media can encourage quick responses, but at the very least, read your comments out loud before you post. It will take just a few seconds, and you will catch many of your errors. 2, be mindful of what you choose to write about. You never know who may see your comments. Posts can quickly go viral. I mentioned texting earlier. Now let's go through some guidelines. Texting can be an unobtrusive way to contact someone and a fast and informal way to exchange information. But you need to make sure that texting is the appropriate way to interact with your customer. If you are not sure whether to text or email, ask the person. You can simply say, "Would you like me to text or email you that information?" And if your customer wants you to text, you need to be professional. This means doing the following. 1, use correct spelling and punctuation. Your friends may not care about your spelling ability, but your customers do. If you misspell words or use bad grammar, your customers are likely to question your professionalism. The next is to remember that it's easy to make a mistake when texting. Double-check that you are sending the text to the correct person, and you know that autocorrect and voice-to-text features are not perfect. They often can misinterpret words or phrases and change your message into totally different, often embarrassing content. Reread your message before you send it and make sure that the message you are sending is the message you intended to send. Another is, don't text under the table when in a meeting. You may not do it in a small meeting with a customer, but many people have admitted that they've done it in a large meeting or during a presentation. It is noticeable and distracting, and it's just plain rude to others. Your phone may not be visible, but the body language of looking down and the movement of fingers can be seen. And one last suggestion on texting. Pay attention to your tone. Be careful that your comments don't sound harsher than you intended. If you write incomplete sentences, your texts will likely sound less abrupt. Read your message out loud. If it sounds harsh to you, it will sound harsh to the recipient. The second part of this recording covers presentation skills. The ability to make an effective presentation is essential. You may find yourself presenting at a conference, to your employees, or to a group of potential customers. You will want to get your point across and effectively convey information about your services, products, and company. And if you successfully make your points, not only does your audience gain information, but you look good. Yet numerous people have told me that they would do anything to get out of speaking in front of an audience. Many people have even told me that the thought of attending my class on public speaking makes them start to feel uncomfortable. We will start this section discussing stage fright. It is important that you have some ways to overcome your nervousness. This first suggestion seems obvious, but people try to get out of doing it, and that is to practice. Of course you're going to be nervous if you don't practice. And make sure you practice your presentation out loud. Saying it in your head isn't good enough. You need to hear how the words sound to clarify the areas you need to work on. You also need to tell yourself positive things. How often have you said to yourself, "I can't do this, I'm going to fail." Or, "Why the heck did I agree to make this presentation?" Don't say those things. You're setting yourself up for failure. Tell yourself positive things instead, and you will start to believe them. After 20 years of making presentations, I still say to myself before every talk, "I can do this, I can handle this." And the last suggestion to overcome your nervousness may be the most important. You want to ask yourself, "Does the audience know that I am nervous?" Because if the answer to that question is no, don't waste your time being nervous. The audience does not know that you are nervous unless you verbally or non-verbally tell them or show them. So don't. If you project a confident and composed presence while you are presenting, your audience will believe that you are confident and composed. The next step is to put together the presentation. But before we do that, it's important to review the three parts of a presentation. And every presentation has an introduction, a body, and a conclusion. During the introduction, you set the stage for the presentation. You let the audience know, in abbreviated form, what you will be discussing and why you are qualified to do so. And you want to make sure you start with an attention statement, something to grab the audience's attention. I have started numerous presentation skills classes by quoting research that shows more people fear public speaking than they fear death. Death is lower on the list. And then I add that when Seinfeld heard that research, he said that it means more people would rather be in the coffin than give the eulogy. During the body, you convey your information in a logical sequence. You discuss your main points and any subpoints you need to cover. And then during the conclusion, you briefly recap what you've discussed and end on a memorable statement. A story, a quote, a statistic, something similar to the attention statement that will leave an impression on your audience. Your call to action, if you have one, would occur here also. This is when you ask your audience to do something, such as sign up, donate, or buy. Now that we know the parts of a presentation, let's review how to put together your talk. The first thing to do is to think about your audience. Who are they? How much do they already know about your topic? What do they need to know? If you address the needs and concerns of the people in your audience, they are more likely to listen to you. You then define your objective and key points. Knowing the objective of your presentation will keep you focused on your topic. To identify yours, finish this sentence. By the end of the presentation, the participants will. When I teach presentation skills, my objective is, by the end of the presentation, the participants will know how to put together and deliver an informative presentation. If you are discussing a new product, your objective may be, by the end of the presentation, the participants will know the benefits of our new product. Now that you have your objective, you choose the 3 to 5 key points that you will discuss and the information to support those points. And then it's time to add your stories. Stories create a picture for your audience, bringing to life the information you want to convey. Your audience will remember the story, and as a result, they'll also remember the point you're making. Stories don't need to be long, just a few sentences that prove your point. I tell a story about going to the bathroom with my cordless mic on during a seminar break. My audience laughs a lot, and I use that story to illustrate the point that it's not what happens to you during a presentation that matters. It's how you handle yourself that matters when these mishaps occur. It's now time to create your notes. Generally, you want to avoid scripting your talk because you will just read that script, not look at your audience, and sound stilted as a result. You do not want to do this. I suggest you create a phrase outline, a few words or phrases that are complete enough so you remember the whole thought. These phrases become the outline of your talk and your notes. You will practice from these notes. As a result, you will be able to look at the audience and sound conversational when speaking. Once the presentation is together, think about the questions you may be asked, especially any difficult, annoying, or nasty ones. Decide how you will respond to them. If you do, you are less likely to be caught off guard. Don't just pray that someone doesn't ask that question. Know how you will answer it. It's now time to talk about how you will deliver the presentation, because your delivery will determine whether your audience gets your message, whether your reputation is enhanced, and whether your talk has the intended impact. The first step is to focus on your body language. Don't let your posture become a distraction. No swaying or twisting your body. No playing with rubber bands or paper clips. And use gestures. They bring your words to life. But don't keep repeating the same ones. And avoid the wringing of your hands. You want to walk purposefully, take a few steps, and then stop. Do not pace back and forth, which becomes a distraction also. Make eye contact with your audience. This is one of the most important aspects of the delivery, as it connects you with your audience. Unfortunately, when people get nervous, their eyes have a tendency to scan the room, never really making eye contact with anyone. Don't stare people down, but do look at them. Get out from behind a podium. Sometimes you're locked behind one because the mic is fixed to it. But when you can, arrange for a lavalier mic, which attaches to your clothing. It will give you the freedom to move around, enhancing your connection with the audience. Be aware of your volume. You need to speak loudly enough to be heard so that what you say registers with your audience. Many people speak softly and don't realize that they do so. Record yourself and gain an awareness of your volume. Listen to how loudly or softly you sound. Practice raising your volume so you are sure that your audience truly hears you. You also want to speak with variety, so sometimes you will speak louder, and at other times, you will project a little less volume. And I know you know that this next item can drive people crazy, and that is the use of filler words. All right, okay. If people are counting the number of okays in your presentation, it is not okay. First of all, you don't have to be perfect. Nobody will notice an infrequent or okay. We all use these words occasionally. But if the audience starts counting your they are not listening to what you have to say. Filler words are simply extra words or sounds that we utter without thinking, but they muddle our sentences. Pay attention as you speak. Once you've identified which ones you use, you will start to notice them as you say them. Before long, you will be able to stop them from coming out of your mouth. Use of humor can serve to emphasize your points and also help people to remember them. But using humor poorly can diminish your message and your reputation. If you are not comfortable with humor, don't force it. And make sure you stay away from sex, politics, and religion. Let me say that again. Stay away from sex, politics, and religion. You could offend someone, and besides all that, it's just not nice. Your attire can help you come across as a self-assured person. Make sure you dress for the presentation. Think about your audience members and what they will be wearing. Dressing slightly better than your audience adds to your credibility. You can't fix what you don't know you're doing. Record yourself on your smartphone when you can, and then review the recording and critique yourself. Analyze what you're doing with your posture, gestures, facial expression, and so on. Pick just one or two things to work on. When you're comfortable with those items, move on to another area. Two additional suggestions for the delivery of your presentation. One, after your conclusion, say thank you. The audience doesn't know that you are finished unless you do so. But do not say, thank you for listening to me. It has been the audience's privilege to hear you speak. The second is to take the applause. I'm sure you've seen speakers who have almost run off the stage and said, phew, glad that's over. Do not do this. You should acknowledge the applause and walk off the stage or go back to your seat with your head held high. Now, let's talk about slides. Slides are intended to enhance your business presentation. They should supplement and support your talk, but not be the talk. They can help you organize your thoughts and make it easier for the audience to understand your comments. Here are three quick suggestions. One, make your slides visually appealing. Don't overload them with a lot of text. If you say, I know you can't read this, but the audience is thinking, then why are you showing it to me? Use an easily read font. Arial, Calibre, and Verdana are three good choices, and make the font large enough for people to be able to read your comments, usually 28-point type or larger. Include a photograph or a graphic when you can. The next is to check your equipment. This seems obvious, but people often wait to the last minute to check the equipment or figure out how to advance the slides. You don't want to find out that there's a problem as you start talking. And the third item is to talk to the audience, not the screen. The audience does not want to see your back as you discuss a slide. And one final suggestion for making presentations is to make them. The more presentations you make, the more comfortable you become. And they don't have to be work presentations. You can offer to speak at your community or volunteer associations. It's the experience of being in front of a group that is helpful. We're now on to the third area of this recording, which will combine developing a professional presence and expressing yourself assertively. We'll look at a few key items so you make your presence known in an assertive manner. The first is to literally establish your presence. Walk into the room as though you belong there, because you do. You want to have good posture, a pleasant facial expression, and a deliberate stride. One woman once said to me, "Barbara, the moment I saw you, I knew you were the instructor." You want people to see you as someone who belongs in the room. You also don't want your body to contradict you. What I mean by that is when you are standing, do not slouch, cross your ankles, or play with your hands. These behaviors will make you appear passive, regardless of how strongly you believe in your comments. Do not point your finger at someone or pound on the table when talking. You will appear aggressive, regardless of your words. To point assertively, use an open palm and keep your fingers together. The next item is don't wait for others to initiate contact. You can go up to people, smile, and greet them, and say hello to people you know and don't know. You don't need to know someone to say hello to that person, and by doing so, you are establishing yourself as a friendly, approachable person. You also need to shake hands correctly. In the United States, the handshake is the business greeting, and if you want to be taken seriously, you must shake hands and shake hands correctly. To do so, extend your hand with your thumb up. You touch thumb joint to thumb joint, put your thumb down, and wrap your fingers around the palm of the other person. Your grip should be firm, but not bone-breaking. It's not a competition. 2 to 3 pumps is enough. And remember, the handshake is not a gender greeting. Both men and women shake hands. The next item is to think about your clothing. Will it be appropriate for the activity or the event you are attending? Make sure your clothing enhances your professional presence. People are more apt to listen to you if you look the part, if you look like the credible person you are. Demonstrate interest in the person you're talking to by looking at him or her and listening. Don't look at your phone, watch other people, or text. And keep your phone off the table when meeting with someone. Yes, you heard that correctly. Having your phone visible tells the other person, "I am so ready to drop you," and connect with someone else. Be ready for small talk and make sure you engage in conversation. Find areas of common interest that can help establish rapport with others. Are you both into playing golf, traveling, or watching your kids play soccer? Also, know what is going on in your field. You want to be viewed as a knowledgeable professional. It's also important to use assertive language when you interact with others. This means avoiding self-discounting words such as just, actually, kinda, maybe, perhaps, as they dilute your comments. Listen to the difference. "I kinda hope you'll appreciate the new software," or "I know you'll appreciate the new software." The second is definitely more confident. Also, eliminate weak beginnings to your sentences. These include phrases like, "I may be wrong about this," or "I'm not sure," or "this is probably a stupid suggestion, but." These disclaimers undermine your statements. Also, be careful with the use of "I think." People often say "I think" when they actually know. As a result, they come across as tentative. When you say, "I think your project will be finished on time," you are saying you are unsure. But if you know, be clear about it and state, "Your project will be finished on time." You can also learn to assertively say no to someone's request without sounding harsh. The secret is to mention, when possible, what you can do. Often, you don't even need to use the word no. For example, a customer wants you to do something, but you're not able to meet the requirements. Instead of saying, no, I can't do that, you can say, I'm not able to do that because, but here's what I can do for you. I know we discussed this next area during the writing portion of this recording, but it bears repeating, and that is, be professional online. Your comments become part of your professional image. And if they indicate that you're a hothead, that you publicly put people down, or that you anger others with offensive comments, why would someone want to hire or work with you? Make sure you think before you post. If you have any doubt about whether your comments will be offensive, don't post them. And the last item is to be a gracious host. Dining with customers or prospective customers is a business social activity, and how you behave with them will affect how they view you professionally. Remember, in a business dining situation, you are not there for the food, though you may need to eat. You are there for business. And if you do the inviting, you are the host, and it's your job to make your guests feel comfortable. Be helpful. Make menu recommendations to your guests, but don't suggest difficult-to-eat or messy meals, such as spaghetti, overstuffed sandwiches, and French onion soup. You want to practice good table manners. Hold your knife and fork correctly, and do not talk with your mouth full. And the napkin is not to be used as a Kleenex. It's also the host's responsibility to pay the bill. And last but not least, stay sober. If not, you may end up saying or doing something that you will regret later. One man got so drunk, he cursed out his boss, got fired on the spot, and then couldn't understand why his badge didn't work the next day. He had gotten fired and didn't remember it at all. One way to avoid getting drunk is to order a drink you don't like and nurse that drink all evening. It's time to bring this recording to a close. We've discussed four key areas of communication, and I would encourage you to follow the guidelines you've just heard so you set yourself apart as someone who can interact professionally with others. But work on just a few items at a time, putting the suggestions into practice. When you feel comfortable with those, go on to other items. You will gradually notice an improvement in your communication skills, and you will stand out from your competition. And I wish you well on that journey. Thank you.